Hi, and welcome back. Let's pick up where we left off.
Yes, greetings and Mbula Vinaka again. This is a podcast, and we acknowledge, as part of the feminist media team for Femlink, really acknowledging the three amazing and passionate women that we have here with us. Maureen Petruelli from PENG, Andy Vasu from Transcend Oceania, and also Cressida Kuala from PERGA Red Sarah Women's Association. This is all part of a dialogue which we will have in a Talanoa style, just an extension of the conversation that we have been having from the last 2 days. About the workshop that has a focus on advancing women, peace and security, building inclusive resilience in the Pacific. Yeah? So welcome, ladies, and it's such a pleasure to have you all today, and we look forward to your contribution. And having said that, we have a few questions here, and you are most welcome to add in your input wherever you feel that aligns to the work that you're already moving. And, acknowledging all the comprehensive input that has been coming through, and that takes us as well to our next set of conversation, which is around, in all our current moving work, it is important to recognize and explore a new or emerging models of defense to rightly position Pacific Island nations to anticipate and react to emerging threats through scenario, risk planning, and stakeholder management. However, having said that, in your experience, national and regional level, what would be some major areas of investment that can help us to have that substantial gain or progress?
We should be looking at investment in quality education for women and young girls. When we talk about women, we have to think about young girls and teenage and girl child. We have to imply the understanding that we as women are learning now from each other. We have to create a platform for women from local communities up to national and then regional level, so that we can imply the understanding to the future generations to preserve. Our culture must be all together with the advanced knowledge that we are learning as the time changes, and we are facing problems with climate change and problems with human rights issues. Indigenous people's knowledge is passing away. Even though we don't realize, we are losing our identity through losing our culture. We have to hold on to our culture. We have to let our young people to understand our culture. Whatever policies that we are adapting in the national level and in the regional level, we have to create the mechanisms in a culturally appropriate way so that we can collaborate to understanding together, to collaborate as well, so that we can move into the future without creating collusion of the cultures. Our children can learn about that. We're concerned about girl and woman and the food security and peace. If we need peace, if we want to create peace, we have to create education for our men and young boys so that they can understand from where we are coming from the islands or from the coastal areas, from villages in very remote areas. It's the woman that when we get together to build a network, we can create policies in our island nations. We have to adopt systems that can help women and men together with our culture and traditions in a culturally appropriate way, and we can survive in the next 2050 with an improved lifestyle.
Thank you. Adding on to that, I think one area that our investment should focus in more is investing in young women and resourcing spaces that contributes to this already. I think there are some progresses in in the past couple of years that we need to strengthen, investment of engaging young women in decision-making spaces, in participatory activities. One of the programs that we run at Transcend Oceania is the Cross-Gender Dialogue, where we run programs in partnership with young men or boys or men to prevent violence against women. But how can men engage in this area if they don't hear or listen directly from women? So we have the program of cross-gender dialogue where women get to ask men those critical questions that men needs to know. And they need to listen from women's experiences of life and why women also need 8 hours sleep, for example. Why young women needs to also access education. And also to listen from to women on what power means to them and what kind of power, positive or negative, that we should learn to understand. And in our different positions, that we understand this, to demarcate it, and to be able to use it appropriately to support each other, to enable a peaceful environment. We have climate change as something that we cannot control, but our relationship between each other must be nurtured to be a positive change. And this should not be an issue that we have to work harder at to improve on. If men and women and all diverse groups understand the power relation and how we should be engaging constructively and positively amongst each other. And I think if we learn this, then we can together focus on climate change as an issue of change that we need to consistently address effectively. So investing in those kind of spaces, I think, is key. It is important to support all training facilities and training programs that nurture such activities, that bring together our understanding of these power dimensions, of the support system that we have, and we can also contribute together to rebuild, to redesign, maybe to unlearn and relearn behaviors to impact positive change.
I mean, the range of responses both within countries, between countries in the region is critically diverse, and also around investment. So I think if we just take a look at what Pacific Island governments are doing, I think it's quite clear where the investments are going. And I think that's one where civil society really should be supporting to advance, particularly because they're doing the heavy lifting around things around mitigation, to address mitigation. The work that Tuvalu is doing to ensure that the integrity of a sovereign state remains in place within the context of rising sea levels is quite a critical one, because that is really addressing the investment that our countries are doing politically, but also around legal norms and laws, so that in the context of sea level rise, these countries will remain and their sovereignty, cultures and traditions, food, all of that would remain. So that's one extreme investment that our countries are doing around laws, policies, and that's supported by things, you know, where Pacific is leading on the ICJ advisory opinion. That's obviously gotten a lot of traction from the international community. We're seeing the Pacific leading again on the prohibition on fossil fuels treaty that's currently being negotiated. So that's what our states are doing in terms of their investments, political investment, using the multilateral system to bring about that. But at the same time, a lot of our countries are investing in resilience within our countries, whether it's through, in the case of Vanuatu, this whole discussion around genetically getting the kinds of disaster risk crops so that they are ready to respond to disasters. There's a lot of work that's looking at infrastructure, so housing, to ensure that we have Category 5 housing in place. There's a lot of work in terms of health, the health sector, public health, to really look at public health within its widest context, educating our young people, and very quickly, really both as a way. So I think that obviously we are investing at those different levels. And then right down to community level, all kinds of investment. There's investments that we're making to protect, revive indigenous knowledge systems in relation to, as we keep saying, we do come from a knowledge-based system that really has its own language and understandings around climate that informs our ways of knowing and the way we've lived. So I think there's all of these efforts where you can see it's led, it's extremely diverse in terms of where. But I think that's where we need to really push for wider support outside from the Pacific. We need other partners globally to support the efforts of the Pacific. And I think it reminds me of the Tuvalu saying that if you save Tuvalu, you save the world. And there's real logic and value in that. Because really we are frontier countries. We understand the impacts of climate change intimately, and we live it on a day-to-day basis. So people can talk hypothetically about the science, but we are the living experience of what it means and what, for most people, that's what they're looking at, the impacts of climate change. So I think our investments are extremely varied, difference in scale, but I think we need to just enhance that more wherever we can, whether it's sectorally and all, you know, from your grassroots all the way up.
Thank you. And that brings us to the last question, where we are going to be, the question is around seeing where we are at in terms of climate impacts on our communities and community livelihood. What trends do you predict in 2025 with regards to the impact on security and stability as a result of climate change and food access?
Wow, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation. We'll see you on the next episode.